Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting, starting the show, let's put it that way, broadcasting from Ma'aleh Adumim. I'm here with Rabbi Mike Foyer. We're standing on your mirpeset.
Welcome to my home.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Mike. We're standing on your balcony. To the left here, I see Jerusalem, actually the Mount of Olives and Mount Scopus.
Right.
And we know that...
Unusually so.
That's right. It's on the west. And right above, right beyond that is the Temple Mount. In fact, to get here today, I drove from Gush Etzion.
Over the Temple Mount?
Well, I didn't drive on Route 1. I drove around the back, meaning to say right next to, between the Mount of Olives and the Temple Mount.
Sure. You could keep going, but the road is blocked with a very large concrete wall.
Right. I could have gone through Azariah. In fact, by the way, yesterday...
The circle here.
That's right. Yesterday, I actually spoke in front of Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to a group of 40 Arabs yesterday and a few Jews, and there was an Arab from Azariah. So we were talking about that. Anyway, looking north right now, we see part of the Judean desert. I see Kfar Adumim a little bit to the east here, and we're going to get in the car in just a second, and we're going to head down this road that we see right before us that leads us towards the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
And then we're going to swing a left around Jericho and start heading north.
On Rahavam Zevi Highway.
Rahavam Zevi Highway, a great Israeli minister and general who was slain. And then we're going to be right next to the Jordan River. Maybe when we stop there on the Jordan River, you'll talk a little bit about Elijah and how he was fed by the birds over there at the Jordan River.
Yeah, we're going to go by.
That's right. And then we're going to keep going north until we actually hit the beautiful Sea of the Galilee, the Kinneret.
Gem in the north.
The Gem of the North. And also, by the way, known as the Kinneret in the Bible as well. And we're going to swing a right at the Kinneret, at the Sea of the Galilee, towards the Golan Heights. And we're going to climb towards the Golan Heights. And the reason we're going there is because we have a mutual friend who passed away, Leah Goldman. And today is her Yortzeit. Yortzeit, okay, the day of passing, or in Israel we have a better name for it, the Hilulah, the kind of party day.
Definitely Hilulah.
Okay, so we're doing a little Hilulah. This is her seventh year, the marker of her seventh year. And then we're going to climb the Golan Heights, we're going to go to the Chispin Cemetery, a local cemetery. And then from there, we're going to go to our friend Shmuel Goldman's house. We're going to remember our friend Leah.
Eat a little cheesecake in her honor.
That's right, a little cheesecake. Why cheesecake? Because it's the 9 days.
Right, and she loved it.
She loved cheesecake.
That was her insistence, actually. It was her idea.
There you go. And then we're going to go from eating cheesecake. Hopefully, the next leg will actually be to traverse, go down the Golan Heights, and go up the Galil Heights, and that is to go to that amazing and spiritual city, Tzfat.
One of the four holy...
Arim.
That's a word I can never say.
Okay.
One of the four holy cities.
That's four holy cities. We'll talk about that. I'm not a big lover of the four holy cities discourse, but that's okay.
Oh, we can argue.
That's fine. But we're going to go to, but no doubt, certainly an incredibly holy city, and one that I think has great import for modern Zionism. But in any case, one of the most important people in modernity, the Arizal
had tonight. The doors of modernity.
I think so. That's how I see it.
There's no safek.
Right.
There's no safek. Out there in the Olam, Leiman Depali, I mean, you got people that came from him and went in different directions, but the Ari opened the door of modernity to Torah, and ultimately to post-modernity as well, and anything else that lies beyond it.
Okay, so the Arizal, an incredible person. We'll talk about that, but let's make it a little bit, let's bring it down a little. the great Kabbalist, the Arizal, who brought back the study of Kabbalah into kind of normal Jewish life.
Well, he breathed like the soul into it. I mean, the Ramak, Rav Moshe Cordovero, had just finished a massive compilation called Pardes Ramonim, of the whole, basically, scope of the text and the systems in an attempt to put it into one sort of whole thought. And it was Ari came in and basically took the torch from him and breathed a soul into it that then it was inevitable that it become part of everything we do.
It's funny that you say took the torch from him, because the way that the Ari was recognized is when the Ramak had passed away. He told his students, the guy who's going to take the torch from me is the guy who's going to see the torch, the Amuda Esh, that's going to walk in front of my coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, during the funeral, the Arizal was like, why are you guys stopping here? That's the, don't you see that the pillar of fire in front of the coffin has moved further? That's where it wants to be buried?
Well, the way I've heard the story is that he showed up in Tzfat on the day that they buried the Ramak, and that the two never met, and that he was unknown, and only he knew that he saw that torch. And he found out later that the Ramak had told his students. And so it's a gefalt, because only he knew who he was. And then he just became master of all.
I did not hear. I heard that he was a quiet student for a while and kind of like kept, but the Ramak already, the Moshe Karduver, knew that who he was, but wasn't able to reveal him. Okay, any case, we're going to go to Tzfat, and then we'll see. Maybe we'll have yet another adventure. We'll see. But the journey begins.
Journey begins. Let's do it, man.
So let's get in the car and start. It's hot outside, by the way. Let's just tell everybody. It's like, it's something like, it's like 95 degrees, maybe a little bit higher even. It's hot out here. On your porch that's covered, there's a bit of a breeze. But down there, I just came down from that highway. It's very, very hot, and we're going to go
driving on a frying pan, basically, for the next 3 hours.
That's right. We're going to be driving in a hot place. And since there are many great watery holes along the way, but we shan't be stopping there because... We should not, because it's the 9 days, so it's not like a... So this is a pilgrimage. We're going on a pilgrimage together.
Mama, to Yehuva.
That's right. And you folks are going to be joining us on the road. We'll be making stops along the way. Myself, Yishai Fleischer, with Rabbi Mike in the Land of Israel, on the Land of Israel Network. So stay tuned, and here we go. Let's start the journey. All right, folks, we're back on the road trip. Yishai Fleischer and Rabbi Mike Foyer, we are traveling through
north.
The desert. That's right, north. And we...
on a horse with no name.
That's right, we're in the desert on a horse with no name. It's actually my red car, my Škoda.
Oh, it's got a name. We haven't met, I'm sorry.
It's a Škoda, Czech car, and I have my Czech pistol, so I always kind of,
feeling Eastern European right
that's
now?
That's right. And I do like Prague a lot.
I almost taste the waters of the Danube.
Now look, here's a sign, and it says, left towards Jericho.
Don't do it! Don't do it!
And look what we see. We see here also a Jordanian
bunker.
Bunker defense position from before the Six-Day War. And so we're really heading north in the desert, and Jericho is an ancient city. It's also 4,500 years old. It's also known as in the Bible as the city of the dates.
Not mistaken, it's the oldest excavated city.
Mm-hmm. It's really an amazing place, Jericho. Sadly, today it's not a Jewish town.
Well, it's not only not a Jewish town, it's Jew-free.
Right.
It's a bit of a euphemism to call it not a Jewish town.
Well, basically all towns controlled by the Palestinian Authority are Jew-free, except for one.
That's true.
Which is Hebron. Right. That's it.
But that's an important piece of
that's
the puzzle.
Right. I tell people all the time, I say the Palestinian National Movement is an ethnic cleanser wherever it goes. In Hebron 1929, the old city 1948, and 2000, the tomb of Joseph, and wherever the Palestinian Authority is where Jews are not.
Not only that, but even in Jericho, obviously there hadn't been Jews there for quite some time when we surrendered the city to the PA, but they destroyed the famous shul that was there, and there was part of the accords they were meant to protect. So, meaning it's not just the physical Jews, it's even our mark.
That's
so
right.
To speak.
That's right. But we are traveling right now through one of the most beautiful roads in the country, very scenic.
If you like desert.
But there are communities, there are Jewish communities here, and we just passed one called Na'ama.
God bless those strong people that are still holding on to this land.
Right, they're holding on to this land, and also security wise. The Jordan Valley, which is where we are, because we're actually driving parallel to the Jordan River that empties out into the Dead Sea, which we saw, is considered one of the most important Israeli borders. All the borders are important, but
this is it. I mean, this is our face to the east there, and the mad fantasies of giving up control of this. It's not just a matter of like the high points and the open ground and big tank battles. I mean, this is where Yehoshua crossed into Eretz Israel to take the land. They say that Jericho is the key to the Temple Mount.
Right.
In many, many of the words of our holy sages, those midrashim pop up all the time. It's specifically Dushan de Jericho, like that little fat chunk of palm tree, sort of spring-watered land that the city is based on, which is the key to the Temple Mount of all places.
Because it's the entrance
to
the land of Israel. Although, generally speaking, the real entrance to the land of Israel from the east is close to Shechem through the Tirzah Valley.
Yeah, you're sure.
And we'll be actually driving past close to that entrance point. But the other thing I think is very important for us today is that we're starting this week the book of Devarim, the book of Deuteronomy, which took place, the speech, the 30-day speech, took place right here.
Right over there.
Right over there.
The camp of Israel.
Right, you could see the camp of Israel.
Right here.
And you could also see how natural it is to camp there.
Yes.
Although a little hot.
A little hot. Flat open, lots of space, Jordan River right in front of you, plenty of water, no matter how hot it is, and sort of locked and loaded in front of the city that you have to destroy in order to take this whole side of the mountain range.
Right.
Okay. Camp there on the other side.
And we're driving right. And we're driving right there. Right now, we're driving through a small Arab town, which I remember very much. These towns as a kid, shopping in all these places. You can still shop here today.
Still right shop now. In places Absolutely. Like this. And I would say that the function, the fact that people no longer stop. It's hard to picture, but we're actually driving through the town. Meaning, it's a highway that just kind of slows down and goes through these people's front yards and business places. And I think people stop here less. First of all, there was a bad period. During the Oslo War, but also, like, the highway consciousness is not stopping on the side and buying pottery so much anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
People are on their way to where they're going. This is the way to get there. So there is a certain roadside desolation that just comes with any town of this size in the super auto age.
Yeah, and there is a sense a little bit that the Jordan Valley is underdeveloped touristically. It's a beautiful place
in every respect,
right.
Economically, agriculturally. This is potentially the breadbasket of the Middle East. You realize that? With the technology of irrigation and the ability to power everything by solar here, including the process of desalination, this is why the Jordanians on their side, it is actually, that's their Mediterranean coast, so to speak, in terms of the good life. You know what I mean? You look across the valley, it's a little bit higher.
You're saying it's an economic engine.
Yep.
Both in terms of energy, in terms of water, and especially in terms of agriculture.
And the most beautiful part of it is that its core resource is its elevation.
Which is low.
Which is very low. The Dead Sea's at 400 meters below sea level, and we're well above that by now, but we're certainly still 200 or more meters below sea level, even though there are mountains to both sides of us. That type of potential energy just needs creativity to be tapped in endlessly giving ways.
What kind of energy?
The elevation head of hundreds of meters from, say, Jerusalem to here is pure energy. Now, how you exploit it needs a lot of creativity. Usually they're done together with water, which is why they're all these crazy, like, red, dead, med, dead type things that have been around since what's it called? Neuland. Herzl. But everybody has the sense that actually is just literally God giving us, through the grace of nature, endless, clean, unproblematic energy. You just gotta figure out how to use it. Here it is.
So, right now, as we're driving, it's very, very deserty. I see on the upper front right of the car, I see palm trees, date palm trees. And just a second ago, and we'll see it again when we put... Oh, there it is. I just pop over this hill. We're going to see the Sartaba.
Yeah.
And the Sartaba...
You've been up there.
I have. And the Sartaba is basically the last point at this side of the Jordan River where the fires from Jerusalem were lit in order to mark the new month. So it's kind of like, and the Sartaba is a kind of mountain. It's a kind of sharp mountain. It's got trails that go up there. Here we are in these an incredible
kind of
day fields.
Hasmonean fortress at the top still, which is
right.
Right,
there's a Hasmonean fortress up there, and we see the dates, really, as we said, Jericho, the city of the dates, and there they are growing here as they did in biblical times.
You want to talk about tourist underdevelopment? Get somebody to put a reliable sign at the head of the road to the Sartaba. You're out there and you have any power over that. Help us.
We're working on that. We're working on making it more normalized. But in any case, this was a little bit of our on the road. On the road here in Jericho, and we keep going north parallel to the Jordan River.
I'll take some pictures at some point.
We'll head up to the Golan. We have still a long time to go, but we're heading towards the Golan Heights, and we'll be back. All right, folks, we're back on the road with Rabbi Mike Foyer and myself, Yishai Fleischer, and we peeled off the highway.
Intentionally.
Right. The word highway is a kind word. We're talking about really Route 90, which is an ancient road, but
it's a one-lane road.
It's a one-lane road.
If you're American,
right,
you
one
know
lane.
What I mean.
Yeah,
it's
still, it's actually a major
it's a major travel route, and no question, it serves the role of a highway. I just
I mean, there's truth, there's shevach, and then there's exaggeration.
Right. So we peeled off next to a spot where my father used to always stop and look for pottery and artifacts, because it's a tell, which means it's a kind of sacked old city. It's a kind of a you'll find it's a hilltop with where an ancient civilization existed. You can find a lot of shards. You found a very beautiful.
Yeah, it's a nice handle here, huh?
It's a nice handle of a either 2,000 or 1,500 year old piece of pottery. Just to think about who held that is a kind of a deep thought. And we also we walked a little bit and we found the River Jordan, and we're actually underneath the highway. This is old school, right?
This is a fishing hole of epic proportions. I just want you to know, if you can picture like the reeds and the overhanging willow. I mean, it feels like a little bit of Tom Sawyer meets the Bible, right?
Right,
now.
Tom Sawyer meets the Bible. That's we're going to call it. I think that's going to be the name of the show. And it's true. If you had right now a good, and you can see the fish right now. You can see some of these fish.
They're a good like 4 or 5 inch just working the side here. That means that they're under the shade. And the rushes, God only knows.
Yeah, we can really pick up some good fish here. And here's it's the Jordan River, you know. Of course, physically speaking, it's the river that comes down from the Kinneret, which we're about 15 minutes away from, and comes down towards the Dead Sea and is the border between Israel and the Transjordan, the other side of the Jordan, which today is controlled by the...
Hence the name.
That's right, by the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. I like to think of it as a fake kingdom, but okay, whatever. That's
family project that's gotten out of hand.
It's a British imperial project, but I'm sure we'll hear about that on your show, The Jewish Story, at a different time about the story of Jordan, or maybe it's been covered already. But at the same time, there's something so deeply emotional about being next to this stream, this river. At times, it was much more powerful than today, when a lot less water was siphoned off. From both the Kinneret and the Jordan River. A lot of this water also goes to the Jordanian monarchy. It used to be a much more powerful river. Things would really flow here, but today it's more like a type of stream. But it's also very real, and it's here. We're at a very biblical spot right now. We're at a very biblical place.
This is the same river that Yehoshua and the tribes crossed. It's the same river that the prophets went down to, like Elisha and one of my favorite stories, like Naaman, the general from Aram. It's the same river. It's not the same drops of water, but the river is.
It never is.
Well, we could argue about that.
And
depends what the recycling rate is.
The great story of this general that comes from Syria is that he's a great general, but he has this little
leprosy.
He's got biblical leprosy, psoriasis, tzarat, right? And they say to him, you know, these Israelis, they have some prophets who know stuff like this. And he's like, okay, I'll try it. And he comes down to Elisha, and he says to him, okay, cure me. And he's like, okay, dunk in the river 7 times.
Wait, it's even better. Elisha doesn't even come out of his tent. He sends his servant Gehazi to tell him, listen, go get in the river 7 times, go home. You'll be fine.
7 times, just dunk in the river,
you'll
be
fine. And he's so insulted because he's from Syria, so he's got the headwaters of the Tigris and the Euphrates up there. He's like, we have rivers. I thought he was going to come out, do something impressive, invoke his God. And he goes to leave, and one of his own servants says, listen, boss, I mean, truth is, if he told you to do something really outrageous, you'd have done it, right? He's like, maybe you should just get in the river. And lo and behold, of course he does. And the prophet's word is true, so... We all know it.
Right, the prophet's word is true, and also the power of the Jordan, the power of the Holy Land. It's the prophet, but it's also this place.
Hu hadavar. It's a very important point. That what you're saying is so deeply true that people have to grasp it, is that the whole idea that prophecy is bound up with life in the land of Israel is because prophecy isn't an abstraction. It's not thoughts about. It's an embodiment and a manifestation of divine will. So therefore, you're entirely correct that the Jordan is a prophetic river, not in the sense that it's giving you the power of prophecy, but in the sense that it itself embodies the divine will in a different scale than any other river in the world.
Mm-hmm. And as we're looking at it right now, we're looking at this biblical river. I remember the title, I like that, Tom Sawyer Meets the Bible. That's good. We're also under a highway in the modern state of Israel. And right next to us is a Mekorot, that's the waterworks of Israel, pipeline, one of the waterworks of Israel, a pipeline pumping in the fresh water of the Kinneret to the rest of the country. So we're kind of like, we're one moment, and there's really nobody around us, they're kind of above us, we're underneath the highway. So there's the regular state of Israel right above us, the regular thoroughfare, and we're kind of in this quiet place underneath it, and there's fish, there's birds, this beautiful scenery of the Gilboa Mountains. And I think it's a real blessing for us that we got a chance to see this.
Amen. I got nothing more to say about that.
There you go. All right, folks. So we're here at the Jordan River. You're with us, and we'll be back. Next stop, I think, is the Golan Heights. We're going to see the Kinneret in a minute.
Yeah, we'll get a view.
We'll get a view, and then we're going to peel off to the right up the Swiss.
The Rampart.
The Rampart, but the Swiss-type mountains.
Although, you know, Switzerland is actually on the other side of the Kinneret. You ever stay there? There's a great hostel called Switzerland.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the real Switzerland. When you start climbing up the mountains of the Golan Heights, it's like...
It's pretty impressive on the other side, too, but you're right.
All I mean to say is, like, it's a different type of land, a different type of earth. It's this volcanic earth. It's a different type of scenery. And to me, it's like, well, I just crossed over into a different kind of land, Ogsland.
Ogsland,
which is also this week's Torah portion, which is all about the conquering of the land of Israel. We're really in the places right now. We're really, really traversing the places that this week's Torah portion, which is the intro into the long speech of Moses as he's talking about his conquests, which were all Transjordan conquests. All right, folks, we'll be back, and God bless you from the Jordan River. All right, folks, Yishai Fleischer here, and we're in the cemetery of Chispin, standing myself and Rabbi Mike Foyer right before the tomb of our good friend Leah Golda Goldman, or Leah Height Goldman. I knew her as Lisa Height in high school, and then later on she married Shmuel, moved to the Golan Heights. First they were in the Negev, then the Golan Heights, and she was a person that loved to do, loved to build, and was involved heavily in developing the Golan Heights. She didn't just move here for herself, but was into moving people up here, and was helping develop their community of Yonatan, and then she contracted pancreatic cancer. Very quickly, as pancreatic cancer goes, was taken down. And she was a very beautiful woman, and not a small woman. She was come from a very tall family. The reason I mention this is because, like, she shrunk, like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, like shrunk into a little person, and it was an impossible thing to really see because she was such a kind of person of stature, and then suddenly shrunk, and that was it was hard to see her at the end of her last stuff.
Yeah, I gotta say, though, having spent some real moments together with her right toward the end, it's true that her body shrank, but what was happening around her was so big,
mm-hmm.
and was so much of a reflection that he told Ruth, the arousal to prayer and ma'asi, and there are things I do on an almost daily basis still in my life religious that I took on in that process of, and so it's true, she shrank, but her bigness just kind of got set free,
mm-hmm.
and I really... I'm grateful that I...
Well, I'm glad I said that so you could say that. That's really good stuff. We also, for us, the two of us, this was, a little like Stand By Me, you know, like a little trek to go to the cemetery and to kind of visit our friend. Now, this is the seventh Yahrzeit site, the seventh year of passing. I don't think I've been here because every year it falls during the 9 days. We're working, and it's not exactly the time to go up to the Golan Heights. For me, this year, I actually missed Lag BaOmer, going up to Lag BaOmer, which I kind of never do. I said to myself, "Oi, that was harsh." And then I said to myself, "Okay, I'll do a makeup, and the makeup will go to the Arizal." And then I'm like, "Wait a minute, what a perfect thing it is to go up to see Leah, to come up." And we're here just a few minutes in the Chispin Cemetery, which, by the way, is a beautiful cemetery, very elegant.
Somewhere forever. This is it, man.
Right. If you're going to rest somewhere forever, this is a great place. And but we came before the rest of the... we just see right now our friends pulling up. I see Shmuel's car.
Yeah, yeah.
And we made it up here, Rabbi. We did it. We did it, Mike.
And it should be for the Louis Neshama of Leah Golda, but I don't know her mother's name, but...
But Yehuda Vester. Right. And she was a good friend. She was a good friend, and she brings friends together continually. And by the way, the plot that she bought, and that whole area that she tried to develop in the Golan Heights, in the Yonatan, which is one of the best towns if you're going to move to the Golan, the best places, is phenomenally successful now.
Yeah.
And I think it's her spirit that pushes it.
Selling their old house. So if you want great neighbors, he's moving next door. If you're looking for a house to buy in the Golan, be in touch.
All right, folks. So we're at the at this beautiful cemetery here in Chispin in the Golan Heights. And the journey continues, and we made it to Leah Goldman here. Yishai Fleischer and Rabbi Mike Foyer on the next leg of our journey Last we spoke, we were at the tomb of our good friend Leah Goldman. And then right after we finished recording, immediately a whole host of people, maybe 50 people, came and shared great words, beautiful words. And then we went back to our friend Shmuel Goldman's house, and we had cheesecake. Now, the cheesecake celebration aspect, it was really nice because on the one hand, it was like a little mournful at the tomb, but more celebratory and kind of l'chaim-y at the house.
Cheesecake and tequila. You left out the tequila.
That's right. Cheesecake and tequila. But I had only one, since I'm driving today. Mike had two. Right. And also, we saw the new house that is being built, the Goldman family, and that was really something beautiful.
It was like a little piece of geula to see like a future being built with such big aspirations.
Yeah, big aspirations. A wooden house in the Golan Heights in Moshav Yonatan, in the town of Yonatan. And also, Shmuel spoke a lot. Now, Shmuel got remarried to a wonderful Batsheva, and they have a humongous family together. And this house is to house them. But it's been exactly 7 years, and he talked about cycles. He talked about really the end of a cycle, and I later mentioned to him, and I'm sure you know that, like, they say, maybe it's just a saying, that, like, all your cells switch out every 7 years. And so, like, it's like the cells have switched out, and now it's time for new home.
It's new, a new, yeah. I definitely had that feeling as well, sense of closure that he's getting in not leaving anything behind, but, like, you know, bringing with him what he needs to into the next phase.
Yafeh. And we bless you, of course. I mean, this show is really also about you. And so we're blessing you with exactly that, being able to get to the next phase, finishing off one phase well and going on to the next. And also knowing that it's okay to say, I'm reborn right now. That's one of Rabbi Nachman's greatest lessons, is like, I'm reborn right now. I'm starting again. Now, speaking of reborn, the Jewish people have been reborn in the land of Israel. Rabbi Mike always says embodied. We are right now maybe in the place that symbolizes the beginnings of that re-embodiment in the middle of the 16th century here in amazing and spiritual Tzfat. We actually made it. We drove from the Golan Heights down towards towards kind of the plateau, the lower plateau of the Kinneret, and then back up.
Skipped off the top of the Sea of Galilee.
That's right. And climbed the Galilee. And climbed to one of the high cities in the Galilee, which is Tzfat, the capital of the Galilee, really. And underneath Tzfat, or at least on its lower slopes, on the western slopes of it, is this incredible cemetery, which has so many holy people. And the cemetery itself is, on the one hand, you know, well-maintained, but on the other hand, not.
Yeah, so, there are some pretty dank, decrepit caves that we just climbed into.
Right. And it's got a mix of kind of like very holy and then kind of like also kind of broken and built. And I don't know. But we are not alone here today.
And Breslover Tech music in the background.
Breslover Tech music, but not and non-instrumental.
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 For sure.
And we're here with, how much would you estimate? I don't know.
How many people here? Thousands.
There's thousands of people here, easily overnight. I'm just going to throw out a number. I'm going to guess there's going to be between 50 to 100,000 people that are going to come to this place.
Tonight, you think so?
Yeah. Because in Meiron we're talking about almost a million people, so on Lag BaOmer. So today I'm
scaling back.
I'm scaling back, but still a lot of people are here. There's a lot of people. It's not squished, but there's definitely a lot of people, and we're walking through the cemetery. And we went today to the tomb specifically of the Ari Zal, the Ari HaKadosh.
That's right,
Rabbi Isaac Luria, the saintly, godly Ari, who came here around the year 1570.
Yeah, he was here 1570, 1572.
Right? And in the short amount of time that he was here, he performed many miracles, taught a lot of Torah, and we're still to this very day trying to kind of study the Torah that was taught. His faithful student, Rabbi Chaim Vital, wrote a lot of it down. It's kind of, he wrote it in Damascus, actually.
Yeah, he wrote it later. I just want to go back to what you said about how we're standing in the middle of a graveyard, and yet this is so much, and I think you're correct, where the place of redemption began. The redemption we're living now, the spirit of it, came to rest in Tzfat at that incredible time. We also stopped at the burial place of the Mechaber, the author of the Beit Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch, and then just so many
Yosef Karo.
Yosef Karo. There's just so many holy souls, and so it's true that we're still learning the Torah of the Ari and Rav Chaim Vital that wrote it down, and other incredible souls and minds that are at rest here. But more than anything else, we're breathing their spirit. And I think that that's why that this place is revolutionary in the history of Am Yisrael, because it isn't just the words of the Torah or the laws or the rituals, etc., that they taught and they renewed. It was the spirit that flows out through it. Because in my experience, that spirit, returning like your essential experience of God to a place of real authority and not just the analysis of tradition, that spirit went on to imbue Chassidut, it went on to imbue, you know, even the Reform movement, it went on to imbue Shabtai Tzvi and the revolution there, it went on to imbue Zionism, the sense that sometimes you have to do what you feel God and the people and the spirit is moving you to do, and you might break some rules along the way, but that sometimes you do that to maintain the story.
Yeah, the Arizal gave, and this is a Chabad word, revivified the Jewish kind of spirit and the study of Kabbalah. And it's very important to note, the return to the land of Israel. That was sure. One of the main aspects of it. And also the rebirth of, it's important to kind of understand the geography here, across the valley is a very tall and beautiful mountain. It's seen right now by a little military base that's up there. And the reason it's up there is because it's so high up and this military base looks down. And that's the town of Meron. And in Meron is buried Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, a Tana, who was buried 1,500 years before the Arizal came around.
That's 14.
Yeah. And what the Arizal said is he was trying to bring back that spirit, the spirit that was of the Kabbalah, of the study of the deep Torah, which was basically packed away for diaspora existence.
Yeah, and the Arizal was saying... thin thread that they carried through, a very thin thread. But yeah, he opened it up.
He said, okay, we're unpacking.
Yeah.
The suitcases are back in the land, and we're back home. Let's start to unpack them. And on the physical plane, we're talking about the Turkish period, where Jewish people started coming back to the land of Israel and rebuilding here in Tzfat, in Hebron, in Jerusalem, in Tveria. Those are the four holy cities, and that's based on the idea that Jews were able to live in the land of Israel. These cities opened themselves up to be able to live there again, to rehabilitation.
And it's important to note, of course, that he also was so much a part of reviving the spirits of Am Yisrael after the tremendous destruction of the expulsion from Spain.
Right.
Which, you know, at least for the Ashkenazim today, but perhaps maybe for all Jews, almost everything has been
overshadowed,
that's the word I was looking for, by the reality of the Holocaust. And it's just another way in which our own time parallels this time. The gates that opened here were so critical for the spiritual revival and even survival of the Jewish people. And today, we're struggling hard, and I think in some places succeeding, others less, to try to revive that spirit of what does the Torah have to offer us today that can not only bring us back to the healthy body, which, Baruch Hashem, we've achieved, all the good roads we drove up here, the thousands of people around us. I mean, it's a pretty crazy thing to see a party in the middle of a graveyard, but that's basically where we are right now. But we have not yet tapped the deep root of the spirit of Torah, which can be embodied in the vessel today. Perhaps because the vessel we've built is so big and strong that the spirit that's going to fill it is going to be something we've never seen before.
And we actually went to the underground cave tomb of one person who really tried to embody by bringing back
an institution
which is the true rabbinate, the rabbinic smicha, the passing it on through the laying of the hands, and that's Rabbi Beirav. And we went to, and now he did get 100 rabbis together here in Tzfat and resurrect the idea of a true rabbinate. It was not accepted fully. It was fought in Jerusalem by that rabbinate. That's a whole story in itself. But we went into this person who actually was like, okay, I'm making a move.
Yeah, and it's so important to note that the move he was making was an attempt to sort of bring the Torah into its full potential today. There's so much that we cannot deal with. So many of the pressing problems that we face that seem to be threatening to tear Am Yisrael apart. What does it mean to be people in our land? What's right? What's the right gender energy balance within Am Yisrael? How do we relate to the goyim in our land? All these questions that we could really use inspired rabbinic leadership on. We're working within a broken system, and Rav Beirav understood that you got to start from the foundations, much like Rav Kook in his day, who very much felt that his work was part of reviving the Sanhedrin.
So I just want to bring you back to where we are right now. It's night. Right, that's another thing I forgot to mention, which is we shifted from daytime travel to nighttime, which is a different thing.
Kind of like a black and white cookie.
Black and white cookie, just different sides of it. One black, one white, vanilla chocolate, you know what I'm talking about. But we moved into night mode, but we're in a cemetery, an ancient cemetery, very lit up. very loved. There's these big floodlights everywhere, and there are thousands of people alighting these stairs, mostly ultra-Orthodox Jews wearing very nice suits, and everybody's very well-dressed. There is some a cappella music in the background. The air is warm, but with a tinge of coolness, as is befitting the kind of light air of Tzfat. We're on a road trip to connect with holy people in holy places. We saw the outskirts of Jerusalem. We saw Jericho. We saw where Moses gave his final soliloquy, his monologue. We went up. We saw the Kinneret. The Jordan River, not the Kinneret. We did see the Kinneret for a second, and we got to Leah Goldman. We ate some cheesecake, some holy cheesecake, and we had some holy tequila.
And she was a holy person.
She was a very holy person, and now we're in very holy Tzfat on Hey Av. So when you're here in the land of Israel, think about coming here during Hey Av because it's awesome. And that wraps up this leg of the journey. And I'm going to keep the last leg of the journey
a mystery.
We'll see how it happens, if it works out or not. But we keep going. So stay with us. Rabbi Mike, on the road.
Woohoo!
On the road, on the holy road in the land of Israel. So, on the road trip with Rabbi Mike Foyer, next stop, maybe our last stop, who knows? A stop that I didn't want to say because I wasn't sure we're going to make it. We weren't sure we're going to make it, but here's an interesting story. Lubavitcher Rebbe has a shita, has a way of thinking about the 9 days, which the Mishnah says, Misha nichnas av mimatim besimcha. So the Hasidic Lubavitcher way of explaining that is mimatim, you do a little bit less besimcha, but you do it with joy. And in fact, the idea that Lubavitcher Rebbe had was to do a siyum every night, and he called for the study of Rambam 1 year, the study of all the Yad Chazakah, the Mishnah Torah. Right, which is the halachic codex is a thing for an audio. Codex is a thing.
Comprehensive presentation.
That's right. Comprehensive presentation of all the Talmudic laws, all the halachot, everything. And the Rambam sat down in. He lived in around 1166. He was in Hebron, by the way. So you know, somewhere
later in his life, I can't remember the exact date, but he died in 1204. I think it took him 10 years to write the Mishnah Torah.
Right.
So my guess is probably 1160, 1170, somewhere in that zone.
So tonight was the night that in the Chabad tradition, they finished off two different types of Rambam learning. One is the one-year cycle, which you learn three chapters a day. And when you learn one chapter a day, it takes 3 years. And they both coalesced on this night tonight here in Tveria. Okay, here's the thing. Rambam passed away in Egypt. He passed away in Egypt, and the story goes that they put his coffin to the back of a donkey. And the donkey kept on walking.
It just wouldn't stop.
It wouldn't stop, and it came to Tveria.
The Energizer donkey.
Right, the Energizer donkey, right. And it came all the way to Tveria. Where is Tveria? It's on the shores of the Kinneret. Rabbi Akiva's buried in this town. And here, and this amazing complex that they've also beautified recently, last two years. We're talking about the tombs of the Rambam. You have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was right after the destruction of the Second Temple. We're talking about Rabbi Eliezer Hyrcanus. We're talking about, who else? The Shlach HaKadosh. I don't know when is the history of the Shlach HaKadosh.
Shlach is a 17th century figure, and he was one of the people who really brought the Torah of the Arizal, where we've just been, a little bit more into the, I wouldn't say popular consciousness, but into the consciousness of a broader group of Talmidei Chachamim, of the sages.
And the Shla is Shnei Luchot Abrit.
That's his
book.
Yes, that's right, Shnei Luchot Abrit. I want to throw in that the learning of the Rambam is something I would recommend, and in fact do recommend to everyone. I myself, when I first became religious, I didn't grow up with a religious education. I went to public school all the way through grad school, in fact. And when I asked the rabbi of the community that I joined, what should I do to start learning? He said to me, learn the Rambam for two reasons. First of all, it's written in Hebrew, which is between Mishnaic and modern, and it's in a style which is clear and precise and just will teach you how to read. And second, you get a picture of the entire Torah.
Right.
It's an incredible thing.
Okay, so that's exactly the topic that I wanted to hit to. But let me just make it clear to everybody. We were I explained already where we were, but in the last segment, but we came down from Tzfat, and we came down from the heights of Tzfat down to Tveria, and that's where we are in this town. There's a big, beautiful complex. It's not a cemetery exactly. It's a kind of complex of the great ones.
Yeah, it's even. It's a marker for where they're buried.
But they are buried here.
Yes, no, no. I mean, yeah. But it's not a cemetery.
It's a mini cemetery.
Yeah, but the power of it is in the fact that you can now, from quite a distance, see this incredible structure that's all lit up that they've built, almost like a flame rising above his kever. And, you know, one of the reasons that we were just at the Hilula of the Rizal is that that there's a celebration. Hilula can mean a celebration, but it also means light. Right, because when someone whose soul is as great as the Rambo or the Rizal leaves its body, it doesn't get more dim. It is freed from the specific confines of the flesh, and its light grows stronger every day. And you just think about, we miss the celebration of the Chabadnikim here, but just think about the thousands of people all over the world learning the Torah of the Rambam every single day. Right. Right? That's a light that's only getting stronger.
Right. And the other topic that you touched on that I wanted to talk about is a concept, maybe you don't hear about it a lot, which is Kol HaTorah Kula. Mm-hmm. Kol, the whole Torah altogether. And I read something in Rabbi Nachman Breslov that blew my mind. He's like, people really love the idea of traveling all over the world and being able to say, hey, I was in Zanzibar. Hey, I was in New Zealand. Hey, I was here and there.
In Lagos?
Right, I've been to all these kind of places. He's like, that's the way you should be in Torah. Yeah. You should have gone to every place in Torah. And so he says, learn Shulchan Aruch. Other people say, learn all the Mishnah. Other people say, Lubavitcher Rebbe says, learn all of the Rambam. But
Or
do them all, hopefully. But the thing I actually want to say before we even talk about what we do is that the people that the great ones that we visited today, if it's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if it's the Rambam, if it's the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo, and certainly the Arizal, these are people that knew Kol HaTorah Kula.
Yes.
They stand for Kol HaTorah Kula, the whole Torah. It is something that is humanly possible. Hashem wants us to know the whole Torah.
It's not only humanly possible, but the divine within us is released by it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why people like Rabbi Yochanan and Rambam and the Ari could have brought what looked like such newness and power into the world. It was because they were so rooted in the entire Torah that they were able to give voice to what the Torah had to say in their time and for the generations to come.
So we are now in Tveria, which is on the coast here. It's on the coast of the Kinneret, of the Sea of the Galilee, which is a big lake. Although mystically speaking, it holds the Well of Miriam. And there's many, many Hasidic stories about the Kinneret. This is a funky town, Tveria, it's got different kind of energies inside to it, but it's very...
It is a schwitzy town.
Schwitzy,
We're lakeside here, but we're good 200 meters still below sea level.
That's right.
It's a bit warm.
It's warm, know? But not for us right now. It's really good. It's pleasant. It's nighttime. It's 11 o'clock at night. Not a lot of people. There's not a lot of traffic.
There are people who, hearing that out there, will say, wait, Mike Foyer is awake at 11 o'clock at night, from home?
That's right. It's a special night. Mike Foyer's family is away, and so we are on a road trip, and finished Tzfat, and now we're finishing with Tveria, and we're heading back down south now.
That's right.
We're going to head back south towards Maale Adumim. We're going to go down towards the same road that we came up, with the help of God, we'll stay safe. You know, it's not a lit-up road,
amen.
But we'll drive through the Jordan Valley, next to the Jordan River, next to the Gilboa Mountains and the Shechem Mountains. Up through the Judean mountains, we'll cut our way through up to Yerushalayim Yer Kodesh.
All right, I'm ready. We're going?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Okay, we are now parked back in Maale Adumim, right back where it all started. It's now 1:20 in the morning, and I think we started the journey around then. Wasn't it?
We left my house at around 2:15.
Okay, so it's been almost 12 hours. Almost 12 hours, and we've seen a whole lot of the country. And
the spine of the country. You know, it was really like that live line from here up the Jordan to the Canary into the Golan back around. It's really...
Yeah, and we also saw we were in the militarized part of Judea and Samaria. Then we went into kind of regular Israel. We didn't do a lot of, like, it wasn't a Zionist or an army tour or anything like that. But we saw the living land. We also saw parts of the land of Israel that were on the other side that were now controlled by the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan.
Gets our land back.
And we also saw some holiness. I think we saw a lot of holiness today. We also saw Friends, we also saw the ultra-Orthodox Jews, and we schmoozed a whole lot, that's for sure.
That definitely very valuable time. It's, you know, one of the powers of a road trip is the destination is sometimes secondary to the process. And rolling along here, I kind of wish that people could have seen the ping-ponging from depth to surface to the associative to, wait, why did I say that?
Right? Or been, what were we talking about?
What were we talking about? It's definitely been a worthwhile journey.
Baruch Hashem. And I want to thank the car that took us. I want to thank the God that took us, the real co-pilot of the whole story. And of course, I think there's always a constant sense of luckiness, which is something that I think that our listeners know about. But it has to be said, which is this constant sense. It's sometimes said, sometimes not said, which is like, wow, we're living in this great time. And yes, we'll discuss the problems, and with that consciousness, that it's a great, great time.
I mean, you saw that was what was written on Leah's tomb, right? That's a quote from the Midrash that says that until Leah came into the world, no one had ever given thanks properly to God. And that's why, because she named her son Yehuda. And here we are, we're Yehudim, right? And because that's the essence of what we're put in the world to do, to see the good, to be grateful for it. And I have a tremendous sense of gratitude for everything we've gotten to do today, and just to be able to see the good green land.
And I think personally, I feel a little up, a little bit holier, a little bit closer, a little bit more touching the Rambam, touching the Arizal, you know, touching these people and these cities that are really what Yoav, David's general, called Arei Elokeinu, yeah. Right? The cities of our God. And you just get up from that. And I want to recommend to our beloved friends out there listening to the show that you take a road trip in the land of Israel, in your soul, through Jewish history, right? That's really, there's many levels of it. And the one thing that we didn't get to do, because it's the 9 days, is do water, and that's a lot of fun, all kinds of different waters there. And we didn't do a lot of eating, except for the cheesecake. It was a 9 days tour, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's appropriate to the time, and I want to emphasize that idea of being able to touch the kfarim, touch the graves, and to walk in these places is, to me, the deepest of almost mystical acts, because it brings the reality. You read the books of these mighty sages and you see the depth of their Torah, and sometimes you forget that they walked the earth just like I do, and that the great power of the tradition that we've been handed on is its ability to be real in the world and not just to be an abstraction. And that's the grace of being in the land of Israel.
Indeed it is. It's history, it's great people, it's the land below the society on that ancient land that has a personality, that society that lives in a godly path, in the path of the forefathers and mothers, and it's the God above.
That's right.
It's this kind of triumvirate that comes together. I want to thank Ben Bresky for doing a great job of putting all the different pieces. There's actually 7 pieces to the show today, so I want to thank Ben for that. I want to thank Moshe Herman for getting the show out to the world, and I want to thank also Tabitha for getting it out on the Land of Israel Network. I also want to thank you, Rabbi Mike, for joining me today, and I'm glad that you had this opportunity and this time. I want people to check out your show about Jewish history called The Jewish Story at jewishstory.co, correct?
Right.
That's right. And also RavMike@thelandofisrael.com is the way to reach you. Is that right?
Correct. And they can also find me on Facebook, Rav Mike.
There you go. And myself, Yishai Fleischer, yishaifleischer.com, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. I want to thank the Land of Israel Network. I also want to thank the good folks in Hebron, which bring you to the tombs of the forefathers and mothers, the founders of the whole story. And that's it. I'm going to end the recording now, and that means I hit reverse in the car and head back to Gush Etzion. It's another 30-minute ride through Jerusalem, or next to Jerusalem, and then home sweet home. Home sweet home. The Land of Israel is home sweet home. It's calling to you. You're part of something great. When you're living in this great time, just plug in a little bit more. That's all God is asking for you. God bless you folks wherever you are. Rabbi Mike, thanks again.
Oh, thank you.
Shabbat shalom, everybody, and God bless.
Jonathan Pollard, served in an American prison for 30 years. In 2015, he got out of jail. But is he really free? Listen to Inside Israel Today to find out what is going on with Jonathan Pollard right now and his quest to come to Israel and to take care of his wife Esther, who is currently very, very sick.
That's Inside Israel Today with Gil Hoffman, the Jerusalem Post's chief political correspondent on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.